You're listening to the Cash and Burn podcast, and I'm your host, Brandon Metcalf. Join me as I interview and have conversations with founders and leaders about the greatest obstacles and challenges they've faced while building their businesses, learn how they overcame them, and ultimately what made them successful. The podcast is brought to you by Place. Place is a B2B SaaS customer subscription management, billing, forecasting, and metrics platform powered by Salesforce. Growing SaaS businesses use Place to better align their revenue and finance teams so they can boost revenue growth and retention, manage renewals, collect cash faster, and make more informed decisions all directly inside of Salesforce. What's up, everyone? Welcome back to Cash and Burn. This week, I have Derry Holt, the CEO and co-founder of OneUp. Hey, Derry.
Hey, how's it going, Brandon?
Good. You're on the other side of the pond, right? You're over in Ireland or the UK? I forget.
Close enough. Yeah, UK. I'm just outside of one of our main cities in England called Birmingham. And we've enjoyed a very, very rare sunny spell here in the UK. I think it's been 20 degrees plus every day for the last 4 days. Wow. I know that you guys over there tend to enjoy a little bit more sun than us. We're used to very grey clouds. So for once, it's actually quite pleasant.
Yeah, I used to have an office in London and an office in Dublin with Talent Rover. In London, I probably spent off and on 6 months of the year there. So I love that city. I'm excited. I'll be back over at the end of June for Salesforce's World Tour. But Dublin, like anytime I ever went to Dublin and it was sunny, I would extend my trip.
Yeah, because it's such a rarity. It feels like you're experiencing the seventh wonder of the world or something, right?
Indeed. So, well, why don't you talk a little bit about who you are, what OneUp is, and give us some context about your background.
Yeah, sure. Ooh, where to begin? I guess starting with me, I'm a developer by trade. So I went to university to study computer games programming. I think like a lot of teenage kids of my generation, we were super into video games. Thought, yeah, it'd be great to learn how to make these. And really for me, it was also the view of you're learning computer science, but it's applied. So for me, looking back to like school studies, I'd really enjoy subjects where there was an application to them. So for example, mathematics wasn't really for me, but things like physics were, because physics is applied mathematics. And video game programming was really a similar sort of story, but for computer science. I had a really good like 12-month spell working in the games industry on the Angry Birds series, which was the go-to thing before Fortnite became a thing. And we had a lot of fun with that and then went back to university, finished that off. I just realized one other thing, my window's open. You might hear a train every now and then, we'll deal. And off the back of that, me and my co-founder set up the company as it is today. It's called Stormburst Studios. And the product that we started working on was OneUp, which really we started with the view of how can we combine sales with motivational technology. Obviously, being into video games, we're massively into how can people be motivated to do things right. And sales, where you produce lots of data, you know, phone calls, meetings, you name it. How could we combine that together with the motivational techniques we'd learned from making video games? Those two things just came together really nicely. And now fast forward 7 years down the line and things have gone through a very rocky roller coaster ride of all the highs and lows of entrepreneurship. It's been great.
Well, I can't wait to get into all that stuff because that's the meaty part of the show. But about OneUp, like, so what are you guys like, what's the product really do and who do you sell to?
So I guess it kind of helps to set the context of who you can think, how you can think of companies as they might be today, right? If you look back at a classic sales floor, you think of a lot of people hitting the phones, it's like a whiteboard in the corner detailing who's currently top dog, who's made the most calls. But it turns out those stats are 3 days outdated. There's a gong somewhere to ring when a deal gets closed. We like to go into environments unlike that and digitize it, right? So we essentially draw data out of systems they already use, things like their sales engagement tools, Salesloft Outreach, their CRM, Salesforce, HubSpot, many others. Pull it all into our platform and then use that to run sales competitions for you, as well as helping out with data visibility. So you know in the moment whether someone's in the office or working at home, who's performing to what level, how can we motivate that better, who needs coaching and support to be able to deliver more and more, right? And that's really the loose summary of the platform overall. We call it a sales performance management platform because it can cover such a broad, wide area.
Nice. And then types of companies, like any type of company or...
At the minute, predominantly, it's the UK recruitment market, to be honest with you. They bit first. I never really have a solid answer for why recruitment. They were just the ones that showed the most interest because a lot of their CRMs, frankly, weren't very good at reporting at the time. They've got better, but we still tend to beat them out in most categories there. And we've just always found that's a really good market to work in. We have a few non-recruitment companies on board as well, a few in SaaS, but that's a big expansion point for us over the next couple of years.
Man, you're talking about my two sweet spots. So I just launched at the end of last year a new staffing recruiting software on Salesforce called Assemble. And like the need for what you guys do in staffing recruiting is huge. So I completely get why you're plugged into that space. And then of course, my other company, Place, we only sell to SaaS companies. So you're right in my wheelhouse. We've got.
So you get it. You're with me there, Brandon. That's it.
Yeah, we're gonna need to make some magic happen and get you some customers of ours to help support.
By all means, never gonna say no, am I?
Well, why don't we get in a little bit to talk about the joys of building a company and entrepreneurship, like you were talking about. I mean, what are some of the things that come to mind?
Oh, there are many high points and the many low points. There are a good few of them over the years. Low points being having to let go of a team of like 8 people at the start of 2018 because we'd raised 150K the prior year, not really growing our MRR and having to basically go back to square one and start all over again. COVID was a real bugger as well. Like, you know, you feel like you're really starting to build some momentum and then bam, door slams shut in your face. The whole market shuts down and freezes for a few months. Little moments like that have been quite tough, but ultimately perseverance is, I think, what really counts in entrepreneurship. And the highs, when they're high, are fantastic. You know, raising a few funding rounds. I think about 2 months ago, I walked into, so I guess to give context, we are a fully remote company based here in the UK. Everyone that we hire, bar one person, is in the UK. There are 35 of us in total, and every 3 months we get together as a full company. We bring everyone together, including those abroad, get us all in the same room for 2 days and just have that face-to-face bonding time. And I remember when I walked into Bill's, which is a restaurant here in the UK, we'd rented out the top floor for us to have breakfast together. I walked in, and am I allowed to swear, by the way? Or is that no-go? I walked in and I just literally said out loud, I was like, holy shit, this room is full. There were like 35 people in there. The last time I'd seen everyone together, it had been like 18. We just hired, you know, I think we've out hired 20 people in the last year or so. So for us, it was a real mad sort of phase of growth. And just kind of seeing those moments where you see everyone bonding together, having a good laugh as a group. You know, taking everyone away to Portugal for our annual offsite last year, for example, those are the sort of moments that make it worth going through the tougher times, right?
Yeah, and the tougher times, I think, are truly the times that give you the foundation in really what shaped the culture of the company of like, how do you get through them and how do you survive? And, you know, right now living in the world that we're living in, especially in my world in tech, I mean, it's a tough time. In some respects, in other respects, it's a phenomenal time. Like if you can survive this and position yourself for growth coming out of this, there's a huge, huge opportunity. But a lot of things you've gone through is what people are going through now. So I'd love to dig in a little bit about, you know, that you raised that initial first round back how many years ago?
Start of 2017, 6 years ago.
6 years ago, you raised that money and then you had to go into layoffs because the business didn't do like. What was that journey? What was that story?
I think if I look back now, and obviously hindsight's always 2020, the product just simply wasn't ready. You know, we wanted to get out there and sell it. It wasn't ready to be sold at that stage. Now, thankfully, the work we did in that year with the developers that we hired did help us get to that stage, to the point that I could then grow it in 2018 by myself along with my co-founder. But that journey was very much, one, product wasn't quite ready, two, hiring friends instead of the right people. I had a family friend, for example, that had worked in sales in the VoIP industry for about 15 years. And we thought, hey, he knows how to cold call. He'll be a great salesperson for us. And of course, I doubt he's going to listen to this, but if he did, it's not at all anything personal. He wasn't a SaaS salesman. He had no idea how to go about booking demos. He had no idea about LinkedIn, no idea how to deliver a demo, for example. So the only real like two deals that I think we closed that entire year that's really painful are ones that I'd already been working on before we raised that funding round, right? So it was a real kicker, a real humbling moment, a real big learning exercise for me in terms of product readiness for the market and also making sure that you're hiring the right people.
Well, and that whole piece around hiring the right people is a lesson I learned through doing similar things that you experienced where, you know, I looked at my career and the things that I did and, you know, I did different roles and I experimented with different things and I knew longer term I wanted to be a CEO. I didn't know I wanted to be an entrepreneur, which is actually what I wanted to be. But I specifically set out and I wanted to be a generalist. And I got a lot of advice early in my career. No, you need to be a specialist. You need to go one field and do it. I'm like, I don't agree with that. I want to learn everything about a company. So I want to experience everything.
You're probably the same as me, right? Sales, marketing, HR, finance, you name it. We all have to do it.
Yeah. Development, coding, like all that stuff. I wanted my fingers in everything. So I truly understood it. So when I first started hiring at Talent Rover, like I just had the assumption of like, everyone wants to do that and everyone can do everything. And like, this person seems like a great person. I'm just going to hire them and we'll just teach them everything. And sometimes that bet worked, but most of the time that bet didn't really work depending on the role. Like true SaaS sales, there's an art and a science to how to do it, how to make it successful. And yes, you can groom people to be successful in that. But that also takes the right type of mindset and mentality in time. And for me with Talent Rover and even my other companies, I don't have the luxury of time when I'm on a limited amount of cash trying to make as much as that I can happen. That it's not like I'm a Salesforce where I have this massive corporation that I can plug people in and give them a year or two to ramp and be successful. I needed like results now.
That's right.
Need to learn.
I always say you want to be hiring drivers, not passengers fundamentally. And I say it to my team all the time. It's like if someone's here to just kind of be a cog in a machine and take things easy and, you know, a walking pace, they're probably it's not going to be the right company for them. Whereas someone comes in with a real ownership attitude, they just then go, right, I'm taking that and I'm making it better. And they really want to drive things and accelerate, you know, themselves as well as the company. They're the ones who will come through and fly. Like we hired someone who was a former teacher, and bless her, I always hold her up as our golden example. We hired her as a former teacher, no SaaS experience, never worked in a tech company, nothing outside of teaching. She's gone through like two or three promotions in the space of like 2 years, has taken because she came in and took charge of massive areas of the company that people hadn't really neglected, but just didn't have the time or resource to be able to take ownership of, right? And we're seeing it now with a couple of devs we've hired. You know, nothing is too much for them. They'll jump on it. They'll execute it to high quality. They're an owner. Those are the kind of behaviors that you want. And I think from day one, you always hear as an entrepreneur, oh, you've got to hire the right team. No one ever really clarifies what the word like right team actually means. There's a lot of generic advice out there. And it always bugs me when someone goes, oh, you have to do this. And it's like, cool. It's almost like saying, oh, you need a vision. It's like, all right, I've written a one-liner. I've got a vision. Now what? There's a lot more to it under the layers of you need the right team or you need the right vision or you need this, you need that. But you really kind of sometimes have to just learn by getting it wrong. So those mistakes that I've made over the years, I think have made us really good at hiring in team members. I'm definitely getting better at hiring in like senior leaders, for example, because we've gone through two VP sales over the last 4 years. Now onto our third one. He's brilliant. I'm 99.9% sure I've got it right this time. But these are the sort of things, again, that sometimes you sort of have to mess up to really, truly learn and understand, in my opinion.
Yeah, and that's exactly why I want to do this show and talk about the things we talk about on here, because I do think hearing how other people have gotten through it is just so important. And, you know, I completely agree. Like there's so much talk always about here's how you build a company. Here's how you do this. Like, and a good example is fundraising, and here's how you should go out and raise money. And this is how you price your valuation. This, I mean, every company is different and every strategy is different. And it, what worked for a company just like yours isn't going to work for you. And you got to make your own decisions. And I think that's part of the art of building a business and being an entrepreneur is making your own decisions and rolling with the punches and then recovering when one of those decisions didn't go the way you thought it was, because that's going to happen a lot. So you guys did this funding round. You had to cut back a bit because you just weren't getting to where you needed to be. Morale-wise, and I think this is relevant for a lot of the other companies that are laying off right now, morale-wise, that's a hard thing to get through. How did you manage through that?
For me and my co-founder, it sucked at first, but then we're just so ridiculously stubborn that we were like, we wanted to prove that we could still make it work. That was probably the second time I think that we considered shutting the company down. The other was prior to raising the funding round, where we've been like, look, we've tried this for 2 years now, we've not got anywhere. Maybe there's a new idea to figure out. And the timely email from an investor reaching out to us and being like, hey, we're really interested, can we have a chat? It just kind of worked out for us, right? So for us, it was kind of that perseverance piece. And equally, we formed a couple of real key partnerships that year that helped us go from like 2K in MRR to 10K inside that same year. And that was all off the back of me doing sales and just reaching out and really learning how to sell myself, right? Prior to that, it had been a little bit of LinkedIn outreach, a little bit of talking to people, but no, never really any proper sales chops on me. I got those in 2018, I feel, when it came around to really working that partnership and getting what, you know, 25 customers signed up in the space of 3 or 4 months. I had to onboard them all, for example, get them configured. It was, as you said earlier on, it's like you're going into the back room, getting out a different hat and putting it on and going, hi, I'm your CSM. Now I'm your implementation manager. Oh, now I'm the CEO. That joke about wearing many hats really does ring true, I think, in those sort of situations. So for us, seeing the trajectory we got onto in 2018, you know, getting to 10K MRR, hiring in a VP sales to come and join us, who was a phenomenal, you know, first salesperson in the company. He's now a founder of his own company as well, which is brilliant for him. We're still good friends. That really helps kind of change our view of the business from being one of survival to actually, this has really got legs. Let's get out there and grow it now, right?
So it's valleys of death, right? It's like you're in a valley of death and looking at despair, and then all of a sudden you figure something out, you climb it, you get to the top again, and then all of a sudden you're in your next valley of death.
Oh yeah, because think about it, right? We got to 10K. I was like, yeah, hire the VP. It's going great. Couple of mishires in that year in terms of SDRs and things, but generally we were improving as a business. 18 months of good growth, going to 35K monthly recurring, then COVID kicks in. Everything kind of stops. And it took us really a year, so from March 2020 to March 21, to recover to the same MRR number. I think we dipped about 20%. It wasn't tragic, but the market was slow in recovering. People were still nervous about spending money, so I completely understand it, right? And generally, I'm quite transparent. Like, we've gone from, what, 35K in March 21, where we raised 600K, to now being at about 140K in MRR. So I think we're just over $2.2 million in ARR total, 35 team members, 250 customers. So that growth journey has been very fun since the end of COVID. And thankfully, nothing massive has kicked us at the backside just yet. And I'm praying I don't jinx it by saying that.
No, it sounds like you've got some good momentum going. Let's talk about the COVID round, though, because you were telling me that you guys were about to close a funding round right around COVID. Yep. Then all of a sudden the whole world blew up.
It was such a kicker. Yeah, March, April time, we were due to close like 600K, and then COVID kicked in. And I think really we kind of said, well, if we raise this money right now, we can't do anything with it. So there's not much point in us raising the money. We're not about to go nuts and hire more salespeople when our two sales guys that are running the company are saying literally no one wants to buy a thing right now. I wasn't going to sit there. I think at the time you heard a lot of advice like, oh, you can sell your way through it. The right sellers will find a way. And I was just like, look, let's face reality a little bit. The world's going through a once in a century, arguably longer experience. Very fair chance. The last thing on anyone's mind right now is to try and find software that's going to increase a little bit of productivity when most companies are almost fully leveraging furlough here in the UK, right? So we had to just be really careful. We went down to just me, my co-founder, and our head of CS. And we said, let's just look after the customers we've got. Let's see if we can test a couple of product ideas that are really going to help things sort of grow from there. And because we were able to make use of furlough, we didn't really have very high costs. So we were able to kind of just coast for that year and then raise that round properly in the year following. And that's when things started to pick up again. So we were generally okay by that point.
Well, and then you've grown since then. So like, obviously it's paid off and you're continuing to grow. I mean, what do you think was the biggest lesson through all of that with COVID and having to reduce staff and just survive?
Biggest lesson we had during that time. There's so many lessons that we had, is always the battle. I think it's trying to find the positives in any negative situation, which I know sounds really kind of like corny in a way, right? But that was a really sucky time for really, pretty no. much I mean, all of us. But we could have sit there and been really sad for a whole year and not really but done anything. But we were trying new ideas, like releasing a free version of our product. We were reaching out to customers and just saying, hey, look, how can we support you? And some of them were saying, hey, look, we really can't like afford this right now. We are living month to month. Do you mind if we cut our contracts like by half the amount for 6 months? And we'd be like, yeah, fine. And we tried to be quite positive and we were sharing like data that we were getting. So, okay, then what's actually happening in the market? Because we store performance data, right? We know what's happening in terms of sales numbers. So we could share that information. And it was just trying to find all these little kind of R&D projects that we could launch and try and not kind of look at it too negatively and just say, okay, actually, this is a time we can try some new ideas. And they worked out pretty well.
Yeah, I did another episode with Matt from a company called Leader. And, you know, one of the themes around that episode, it was a really good episode. He's got a really cool story. We were talking a lot about perseverance, but optimism and attitude. And, you know, the fact that what we do with building companies is incredibly ridiculously fucking hard. Like, It's every curveball you can imagine gets thrown at you. And, you know, the job of the founder and really the leadership team is figure out, okay, how do I dodge the curveball and how do I keep going when every odd is against you that you shouldn't fail? And it's waking up in the morning and going, all right, let's go, let's do this. And figuring out how to do that in the worst times. In COVID, you know, for us with Place, we were so new. COVID, yeah, it was difficult and COVID sucked, but it didn't really move the company one way or the other than us figuring out how to be remote. But everything we do, we could be remote anyway. So it wasn't like there was the freakiness of like what's going to happen with the pandemic. But from a business standpoint, we had just started selling.
We were very much the same, I think. Well, I can imagine companies that, you know, are VC bats and are relying on being able to close hundreds of, you know, thousands of ARR every single month. They were the ones that were really getting kicked down the can by that. Whereas the companies like us, you know, we were 10 staff at the time. We were at about 35K in MRR, like I say. It wasn't going to break us because we were generally being quite frugal anyway, since we were spending our own money at that point to grow.
Yeah, and like the whole thought of like we have to test different things to make sure it works, like hiring people and seeing if it works. Like at Place, we tried to have a BDR team. Ultimately, it wasn't really how we have grown the business. And we learned through hiring BDRs that a process not working, that our best customers are actually inbound. And how do we focus on generating an inbound engine? And we went through the whole process and then, you know, testing out other things like, did we really have product market fit? We didn't. We didn't have product market fit until last year when the company was 4 years old.
I was having a really good chat with people about product market fit yesterday, actually internally, and just saying how, you know, people say, oh, once you get to 1 million ARR, you've generally found it, you've proved that you've got it. I think product market fit is elusive and you will always be chasing it, right? And there was, I'm in a really good like anonymous founders like Slack group where everyone's got a random name. No one knows who anyone actually is. And it's all kind of shared information. It's very good. And some guy said, oh, you know, for the first time, I really feel like we've kind of found it. And we were like, oh, what are the signs? And he's saying, well, a customer came to us and like was saying, you know, they want to pay this amount for the product we released. And it was the amount that we had in mind. They wanted to get started today, not in 3 months time, which is when we're releasing it. And they just said that key moment when they looked at it, like, oh my God, I need this now. Even before the company were ready to really release it to them, was like, damn, I actually feel like we're really onto something here. I think this was a company that had released like their third or fourth product, and this new product clearly had been the kind of like the magic gold dust they were looking for. Again, companies can go years and be generating tens of millions in revenue and not really find product market fit. It's a constant kind of chase to make sure you're adapting to the market, the needs of the customers, because the times change as well. What was product market fit 10 years ago for a piece of sales tech like ours isn't product market fit today. It's always changing and evolving, right? And that for me is really fun. It's like it's chasing something you can never really catch, which is frustrating in one way, but also really fun that you're being kept on your toes and having to keep on chasing after it.
Yeah, because the technology changes. Like a lot of the stuff that's happening with generative AI. I mean, that's
really disruptive. Don't get me started. The AI conversation is going to completely change everyone's business, I think, at some stage or another.
It already has. Like this morning, literally, I had to create a PowerPoint for me. I was like, this is incredible.
That's amazing.
I didn't even know you could do it. And then I just Googled it. I'm like, can you do this? It's like, yeah, I could do it. And then I did it. I was like, holy shit. Wow. So super, super cool. But that's the journey, right? Of like, how do you continue to innovate, but, you know, innovate in the right way that's still going to get your customers excited to buy your products and not innovate in a way that all of a sudden, it's kind of a nice to have or, you know, not really relevant compared to
that's it.
Another factor you have to consider is like, what are your competitors doing? And are you still truly competitive?
I'm already being asked by like, you know, investors on my board. It's like, oh, are we doing anything with AI? And I'm just like, no, not yet. Like, I get it. It's exciting, but it doesn't really fit what we do right now. In the future, yes. But right now, oh, there's validated problems that we need to go out there and solve that AI won't do for us right now.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to see how it evolves because there's so many different applications. But the trick in my mind is how it's actually applied. Like, what is the challenge it's truly solving and how do you solve it? That's going to be the winners or losers of it, because it can ultimately do almost anything, but that doesn't mean it's going to be amazing. Look at absolutely. Like the world of Salesforce. I build all my companies on Salesforce, and one of the cool things about Salesforce is you can do anything in the world you want with Salesforce. Doesn't mean you should, and doesn't mean it's going to work if you do. I think AI is a lot like that too.
You're seeing a lot of companies, I think, kind of push out there and be like, oh, hey, we've got AI in our products. And it's like, yeah, but is it really like AI? Does it need to be there? You know what I mean? That's what I'm always careful and wary of.
Or is it just some sizzle, some fad that in 6 months you're going to be like, yeah, it didn't really do anything for me.
Exactly.
Talk to me about like the multiple VPs and getting to like a CRO, because I know this is an important thing to you, because you mentioned something to me about Jason Lemkin and what he was talking about with, you know, how to learn you've hired the wrong VP.
Yeah, Jason Lemkin's post basically said it takes you 18 months to move on a bad VP is the idea. It's 6 months of a honeymoon period, 6 months to realize they're the wrong person, and then 6 months to move them on is the idea, right? But kind of going back to the start, we had the first VP who was a really good salesperson, you know, was the head of sales at another company and really liked what we were doing, was excited by it, came to us and he could make calls, he could reach out on LinkedIn, he could do demos, he could close business, but also was moving into sort of that being able to manage SDRs that would then feed him leads as well. And that worked really well. For 18 months, that was exactly what we needed. He got a really big offer when it came around to COVID time. We were trying to cut salaries. He got offered three or four times that amount somewhere else. And I was like, look, we can't pay you that. Fair enough. But thank you for all that you've done. COVID happened, yada, yada, yada. Came out to 2021, hired a new VP who was with us for 18 months. 20 odd years experience in sales leadership. Kind of been there, done that. Not really a salesperson himself, in my view, but was a good leader. And we wanted him to come and build a team when we'd started to already get the foundations of one in place. And fundamentally, you know, again, maybe he listens to this, in which case I don't mean anything ill by this, but I just don't think he was really the right fit for us. Not with the kind of pace the business was going at, the style that we had. You know, we were very proud about our brand, and in some ways he was more, let's get things out the door and just get moving, which kind of clashed a bit with some of our team members internally. And we just didn't really see the same velocity, the urgency, the ownership that I keep on speaking about with all the hires that we try and make now. So he just wasn't really the right guy. And then we hired someone in new about 2.5 months ago, a guy called Chris, who has got all of that, you know, really process driven, very level headed, extremely intelligent, like perfect for what we need, I think, to really kind of calm our team down and start getting that next level of process in place. So we've got 4 AEs and like 7 SDRs, right? It's not no longer a startup team. It needs some structure. Would I have Chris, for example, reaching out to customers and cold calling them himself? Absolutely not. He's not that kind of VP. But we've got a team that's doing in that, and the SDR manager is the one who needs coaching to better support those that are doing that. That's where Chris is really showing his strength, I think. So it's a case of timing with the right person at the right time. And I think we found the right person at the right time for us as we are today.
Yeah, a lot of that goes into like job design, which I think, you know, I've struggled with in the past. Like, okay, how important really is a job description and the job design? It's actually the most, for me, I think it's the most fundamental piece of getting the right hire. Because like in my world right now, our head of sales, our VP of sales at Place, he's actively like engaged in interacting with customers, doing demos, doing all of those different types of things. And that's exactly what we need right now.
Absolutely.
If we were in a larger organization, maybe, maybe not. And, you know, I think he does a fantastic job, and I think he could do any other role, but I need that person that can context switch and be a hybrid. If I would have just hired someone that was only a team leader and can instruct and not do, it's completely the wrong time for me. Mm. And on paper, you could say I need, you know, a VP with 10 years of sales experience and blah, blah, blah. But knowing the nuance of, no, this is what they actually need to be able to execute on for us today, I think helps you figure out some of the hiring, because it's easy to hire, but it's a pain in the ass to fire.
Yeah. There's a famous saying that I love, well, not really a famous saying, but I've heard someone say it a bunch of times now. It's basically saying, I've never heard of someone that fired someone too fast, which maybe sounds a little bit cold.
Oh, I heard one that's even more of a doozy. We had a CEO of a couple billion-dollar publicly traded company come in and speak to our CEO group. And he said, you know when the best time to fire someone is? When you think of it.
Yeah, and that's it. That's spot on, right?
Yeah, because what he was saying is like, if you know there's a reason why this person isn't working, you need to address it then, because otherwise it's just going to fester and it's going to get worse. And that doesn't necessarily mean immediate termination, but you need to take action, because if not, you're just going to waste a year or two or whatever of that person.
Exactly that. Exactly. And we've had that with a couple of our sales guys recently who have moved on and thankfully are in new roles doing well for themselves, but we just knew there was a mismatch there. And I think one thing you have to get into your head as a founder, if anyone's listening to this and is like a younger founder, or it's their first time doing it, whatever it might be, it can feel really heart-wrenching when you think about someone moving on from your company. Now, this is your baby, this is your company, your team, and you want to protect them and you want it to work out. Sometimes the best things you can do, like not just for yourself, but also for the individual, is to get them into a role where they can really flourish. And sometimes you simply cannot provide that role, and there is nothing wrong with that. That's a very natural part of business, and helping them move on and supporting that, sometimes that can be the best thing that you can do for someone, in my opinion.
100%. It's like dating. Like if you're in a bad relationship, get out of it.
Yeah.
And recognize why you need to be out of it, and also recognize what went well, what didn't go well. So your next relationship, you know better what you want and what you need. Mm. Well, I'd love to ask a question on the show, and it's, you know, what do you think other founders and execs, what should everyone be focused on right now?
What should they be focused on right now? Well, we've gone through a real crazy year where it was like hypergrowth, 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 and then it came down to efficiency, efficiency, efficiency. And my view in growing a business is always cautious optimism, right? It's not trying to be, when everyone says grow, don't sprint to grow as fast as you can. Obviously look to grow, but do so in a measured way. When everyone goes efficiency, 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 try and maintain that cautious growth sort of mindset, right? And this really, again, is linked to what I was speaking about with Chris, our new VP sales earlier. He's never too high, but he's also never too low. It's always just nice down the middle. Otherwise, the wins feel great, sure, but the losses are crushing, right? It's horrible, and you can't deal with that as a person. And I think a business very much is the same in my view. It's trying to be looking at it in a way that goes, how can we grow in a way that is sensible, that isn't going to kill us if something turns around and goes the wrong way in 6 months' time, as it has done with COVID, as it did for us back in 2018, for example. None of those events killed the business because we were always quite cautious about it. So for me, and it's my opinion more than anything else, I will state this because I think there's a lot of advice out there that kind of puts things forward as fact. It's very much my thoughts and my opinion is don't go too fast. Don't go too slow. Find the middle lane, stay in that lane, and you will do plenty fine, right? It's not a race. It's not a competition against companies that are raising $200 million inside 6 months of being founded, right? Not everyone has to go that fast, and it's not a problem.
Yeah. And sometimes, I mean, raising that kind of money that quickly will just blow up your business because what are you going to spend it on if you don't have a plan? Like, you know,
Exactly. I admire businesses that want to go through that level of growth, but it's not for me personally. I prefer the kind of more measured, steady growth. That's what I'm always thinking about is how we can do it sensibly too. He says, yeah, having doubled his team size in the last 9 months.
Well, and then you probably aren't chasing your next funding round, right? If you're growing the business sensibly, it's how can we make the business healthy? Yeah, I may do another funding round down the road, but it's not like, how do I get from here to my next round and playing that game?
Yeah, I mean, the funding round is a good one to talk about. We're just about to raise 2.25 mil. And the whole vibe with that for me is, okay, then I'm going to spend it over 18 to 24 months. Some investors may say, okay, spend it in 6 to 12 and then you can raise again. Nope, always 18 to 24 months for me. And at the end of that 18 to 24 months, assuming a relatively conservative model, we need to be break even again. Not trying to go directly into the negative, so we have to raise money or we have to fire people. That for me is sure, it's a great risk taking, but it's irresponsible towards the team that you owe a lot to, who give you essentially a third of their lives to contribute towards your growth and hopeful success as an entrepreneur. I would much rather again say it's measured, it's cool, it's a great growth accelerator. It's going to be for 18 months and we'll break even. If we then want to raise money again to go and do that road again, let's do it. But that's the path that I always try and tread down.
I like it. Well, we are out of time. So
I talk for another half an hour so easily.
and we could keep going for sure. But appreciate you coming on. I think the show's been fun lot to take away. So thanks again for coming on, Derry.
No worries at all.
Everyone else, Cash and Burn comes out every Tuesday. So check us out and subscribe, and we'll see you next week.